Look sharp, steal sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. Gillette's cavalcade of sports is on the air. From Ebbets Field, here in Brooklyn, Gillette presents the World Series. Good afternoon, baseball fans everywhere. This is Red Barber with Mel Allen, greeting you for the Gillette Safety Razor Company as the New York Yankees and the Brooklyn Dodgers get ready for their third game in this 1949 Championship Classic. Fans, for the tops in sports, tune in Gillette's cavalcade of sports the year-round. Every Friday night, Gillette broadcasts the major boxing bout of the week for the Fistic Fancy Coast to Coast. Also, as they occur, leading events of turf, diamond, and gridiron are aired for Gillette fans everywhere. The weatherman has given us a forecast of cloudy weather and no rain, and he's been exactly correct. It is overcast and cloudy as the series switches over here to the heart of Flatbush, but the prediction is still no rain. The air is heavy. There is a strong wind coming in from right field, which is the short sector, which means that left-hand pull hitters will be at a disadvantage. The wind is blowing, quartering toward the left field stands, so the right-hand batters will hit a high, long drive, figure to have an advantage on the wind. Ralph Branca is to be the starting pitcher for the Dodgers. He's busily warming up for that familiar number 13 on the back of his home white uniform. And Tommy Byrne, the strong-armed, stout-hearted left-hander, is getting ready for the Yankees. The first two games have had unprecedentedly efficient pitching. You all know that. They've all been 1-0 ball games. And we've only had a one-inning relief job. In other words, out of four starters, three of them were complete. The other one went eight innings. Only an aggregate of two runs. The Brooklyn pitchers have given up no bases on balls in the two games. So the headline has been pitching. First, it was Ali Reynolds on the strength of Tommy Henrich's ninth-inning home run, winning the first game and beating Don Newcomb for Brooklyn. Yesterday, it was Preacher Rowe, who lasted, made a second-inning one-run stand-up and beat Vic Rashi, and Joe Page pitched the final inning of relief for the only relief assignment. So pitching is the story. However, neither one of these two pitchers today is rated primarily as a control pitcher. Both walk a great many men. Branca for Brooklyn, a right-hander, and Byrne, a left-hander for New York. In the regular season, Tommy Byrne won 15 and lost 7. Wildness was the thing that plagued him more than opposing hitters. He is a hard ball, fastball pitcher with a solid curve, and he changes once in a while. Branca won 13, the number that matches his numeral that he wears, lost 5, and Ralph had sort of an in-and-out season. First, he had arm trouble. And then he was wild, too, and threw a lot of home run balls. So the expectancy is that we'll have scoring today and certainly bases on balls. The umpires are coming onto the scene right now. There's a little meeting there in the Brooklyn bench. Some of the umpires visiting with manager Bert Schotten. And they're sort of grinning. Apparently there's some little joke between them. The crowd is all here. We checked with business manager Jack Collins of the Dodgers, and we can tell you right now the attendance will be between around 34,000 for this reason. There are about 32,000 reserved seats, and that 32,000, not 32,000 reserved seats, 32,000 seats. Now, of course, that includes the bleachers. The bleachers were closed off at 10 minutes of 11 this morning, about 2 hours ago. And there will be 2,500 standing room seats sold. That's all the standing room tickets. So that is the crowd, and that's all there is to that. Now we'll go down the batting orders for you. As the series stands locked to the game apiece, for the Yankees, it is Rizzuto leading off at short. Each manager has changed his batting order quite a bit today. Rizzuto leads off as usual, and Henrich, as usual, is hitting number 2 and playing at first base. Berra, after being out with a swollen hand yesterday, is back in the ball game today. Berra, left-hand hitting catcher. Joe DiMaggio hitting fourth and playing center field. Bobby Brown gets the starting nod over Billy Johnson at third base. Brown at third, also a left-hand batter. Branca, right-hander starting for Brooklyn. Woodling, a left-hand hitter, is in left field and hitting sixth for the Yankees. This is his first start. Umpires moving up to the plate now, and the batting orders will soon be presented. Mapes goes back to right field, left-hand hitter. Coleman at second base, hits 8, and the pitcher is Byrne. The batting order for Brooklyn, Reese, retains the leadoff spot and playing at shortstop. Eddie Mixis, a right-hand hitter, with a left-hander starting for the Yankees for the first time in the series. Mixis starts at third. Carl Farrello is hitting third and is back in right field and reports to manager Shotton that he feels a great deal better. He has a groin injury, you know, that kept him out of the starting lineup yesterday. Hitting four, Jackie Robinson. Miguel Hodges, the first baseman, is batting fifth. Louis Olmo, who finished in left field yesterday, is starting there today for Brooklyn, hitting sixth. Snyder, in center field, is batting seventh. Campanella, catching and hitting eighth. And the pitcher is Ralph Branca. Now the public address announcer is handing out the batting orders to the spectators here in the ballpark. Both pitchers continue working. The six umpires are up there. Casey Stengel, the manager of the Yankees, is up there to present his batting order. Captain Reese, who brings the Brooklyn list up to these pregame meetings, has not yet come out of the Brooklyn dugout. I was talking to manager Stengel, and I asked him, I said, Casey, this ballpark evokes many memories for you, doesn't it? He said, yes. This ballpark here at Brooklyn evokes memories for me from the time that this park was first opened for a professional game. It was a preseason exhibition game, and he says, oddly enough, with the New York Yankees. I was then, back in 1913, I was then a member of the Brooklyn team. And he said, all of the ball players in 1913 thought that this was the last word in baseball park, and that the marble rotunda was, well, the most spectacular thing that ever would be. So time really changes, and that brought back to mind that Charlie Abbott, back in those days when people accused him of having too fancy a park, used to say that baseball was only in its infancy. And judging by the way the crowds are swelling in attendance, etc., I guess the game is still in its infancy. Now we have Pee Wee Reese coming up with the Brooklyn batting order. The ground rules are being discussed. The six umpires and their working rotation. Art Passarella of the American League will be back at the plate on balls and strikes. Lou Jorda of the National League staff at first base. Cal Hubbard of the American League staff will be at second. And Beans Ridden of the National League will be at third. In the left field corner, National League umpire George Barr. And in the right field corner, American League umpire Ed Hurley. Now with the scene shifting over to the National League Park, there is a change in baseball, but it is not as much of a change as you might think. The last 2 days at Yankee Stadium, which is an American League park, the baseballs were stamped with President Will Harridge's signature, and they were stamped with the American League. And the balls that will be used today and for the next two games here at Brooklyn and National League Park, stamped with President Ford Frick's signature and the insignia of the National League. But Spalding makes them both, makes them on the same machines, and there is no difference between them. No difference at all. In other words, one is just the same as the other. The two starting pitchers, left-hander Byrne for the invading Yankees here at Ebbets Field, Brooklyn, and right-hander Ralph Branca, both continue toiling along. There was a very significant ceremony before the ball game, and that was a ceremony in which Commissioner Chandler presented a huge banner to the American Legion Junior Baseball Team of Oakland, California, representing post number 337, the team that won the 1949 American Legion Junior Baseball National Championship, and they've been brought here as a body all the way from Oakland, out on the Pacific Coast, and don't you know that bunch of boys is really having a time? And the commissioner gave them a great big banner. Man, that's some treasure. And it's interesting to note, too, that 27 of the 50 players certified for this World Series by Commissioner Chandler are graduates of American Legion Junior Baseball. 16 ex-Legion stars are with the Yankees, and 11 are with the Brooklyn Dodgers. Now we're going to have the ceremonies instant to the throwing out of the first ball. There's Commissioner Chandler over there in his box, which is just on the first base side, and he has with him a youngster who's just grinning so hard that I don't think he's been able to say a word for a couple of hours. Arthur C. Sweeney, 13 years old. He's a Brooklyn boy, and he was a victim of polio this year, and he has recovered beautifully. And there is Commissioner Chandler shaking hands with Borough President John Cashmore. John Cashmore stepping aside for this youngster, of course. Everybody steps aside for kids, for people who are in trouble, and especially for the fine cooperation with the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. So, Arthur C. Sweeney, in just a second, will take the ball from Borough President Cashmore, and standing shoulder to shoulder with Commissioner Chandler, will fire that ball out toward the mound, and then the ball game will be on its way. Folks, to some of us, this month of October means the World Series and the beginning of football, and to others it means the start of the hunting season. But to all of us, it ushers in the annual drive on behalf of America's community chest. The community chest means many campaigns in one. It represents the biggest federation of community services and givers in the world. Were it not for this once-a-year campaign, each of more than 14,000 Red Feather agency units in it would have to conduct a separate appeal for funds. So when the community chest worker in your town calls for new, make a real worthwhile contribution. There are various payment plans, so pledge now and pay as you can during the year. The ground rules are still being discussed. We will check the batting orders for you in case you just joined us on this Gillette broadcast. Just before Game 3 of the 1949 World Series for the Yankees, Rizzuto at short, Henrik at first base, Berra is catching, DiMaggio in center hitting fourth, Bobby Brown at third, Gene Woodling in left, Fifth Mapes in right, Jerry Coleman, the second baseman, and the pitcher is Tommy Byrne. The batting order for the Dodgers, Reese at short, Nixus at third, Perello in right, Robinson at second, hitting fourth, Hodges at first, Olmo in left, Snyder in center, Campanella catching, and the pitcher is Branca. The discussion incident to ground rules at this park, and of course Stengel is no stranger to this ballpark. Casey was as a player here on the first Brooklyn team to play in Ebbets Field back in 1913, played for many years, was a member of the Brooklyn pennant-winning team of 1916, which is being honored by being guests of President Branch Rickey and the Brooklyn Dodgers at this World Series. And all of them that were alive were brought in at the expense of the Dodgers, and tonight they're to be given a special banquet, and Casey Stengel says, sure, he's going to attend. He remembers that that 1916 pennant was a mighty hard one to win, and he wants to be with those old friends for this evening. And, of course, Stengel managed here in Ebbets Field. So, well, this is the ballpark, too, you know, that Casey walked up the home plate one afternoon, lifted his cap, and a sparrow flew out. And Casey Stengel has had as much as any man that we know in setting the tradition that anything can and probably will happen at Ebbets Field. Yeah, just a quick description of the ballpark for you now. Right field is the famous wall here at Brooklyn. It is 297 feet down the right field line. It falls away sharply to where in right center field it is 395. That right field wall is 40 feet high. It's a 20-foot concrete wall with an additional 20 feet of screen paneling on top of it. And the scoreboard is stuck out in front of the concrete and wire fence in right center field. And you have any number of angles. The concrete wall does not go straight up and down. It goes up at a slant from the bottom and then is straight up and down halfway up. In other words, 10 feet off the ground. There are three different angles where the scoreboard intersects. So anybody who has played baseball will tell you that the right field wall here with its many angles is the most difficult single outfield piece of passage in any of the major league parks. Center field is 393 feet. In left center field, 351. In the left field corner, 348 feet. So this is a left-hand hitter's ballpark. The stands are double-decked here at Brooklyn, all the way from right center field, back around behind left, behind home plate, and to the right field corner. There are no seats at all. It is only the wall in straightaway right field. And now, friends, we'll pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Hear the World Series exclusively on WOR 710. See the World Series on WOR TV, Channel 9. WOR and WOR FM, New York.
Back at Ebbets Field, And the Brooklyn Club goes out to take the field. We will have the national anthem in just a moment, played and sung by Miss Gladys Gooding at the console of the electric organ. She has an odd distinction. She is one of the few women who has a real major league job in sport. She entertains here at Ebbets Field and at Madison Square Garden. So now Miss Gooding is being announced, and we will have the national anthem. One more note before we turn the microphone over to Mel Allen, and that is that we are very happy to see down in the Yankee box that Mrs. Casey Stengel is sitting down there, because to add to the woes of the Yankee manager, Mrs. Stengel was quite sick last evening, but we are glad that it was temporary, because you can imagine how Casey would have felt if his wife had been unable to be out here at the ballpark today. So, under overcast skies, but with no prediction of rain, although you sort of feel it in the air, the ball game is ready to go. Big Branker's on the mound, and here at the microphone, Mel Allen, who has done such a great job in the field of sports broadcasting, has lent it and all of us in it much distinction. Mel?
Hello there, everybody. Thank you very much, Red. This program comes to you by authority of the Commissioner of Baseball. It's intended only for the private use of our audience. Any publication or reproduction of this program and commercial use of the program is prohibited. And so we're all set to go as Ralph Branca, the 23-year-old right-hander from Mount Vernon, New York, who stands 6'2", weighs around 185, is all set to compete in his second World Series. He worked twice in 1947. He won one and lost one. He opened the World Series for the Dodgers, was beaten by Spec Shea 5-3, but he's all set now to go against Phil Rizzuto as the Yankee shortstop, a right-hand hitter, steps into hitting position, chokes his bat a couple of inches. You got Eddie Mixes in close at third. P.B. Reese in a step or so over toward third. In comes the first pitch of the ball game, swung on, popped up into the air, foul off to the right of the plate. Campanella after it can't get it. It's out of play into the upper deck. So strike one as we're underway in the third game of the Fall Classic. Baseball people galore around. Charlie Grimm and Frankie Frisch are here as we look about. Ralph Branca looking in to get his sign from Campanella. Outfield around toward left. In comes the pitch. Rizzuto takes strike two. Called a fastball over the outside corner knee high. Art Passarella of the American League calling balls and strikes. Lou Jordan of the National League at first. Cal Hubbard of the American League at second. Beans Reardon of the National League at third. Now Ralph Branca, the right-hander, throws. Rizzuto takes high and inside for ball one. The count is 1-2. Ed Hurley of the American League stationed down the right field line. George Barr of the National League down the left field line. Branca getting set. Rizzuto in close to the plate up in front of the batter's box. Deep at third now as Mixes with two strikes on the scooter. In comes the pitch. Phil swings and sends a drive down the right field line. It's going to go foul and out of play. Missing the wall by about 10 feet and foul by about 25. Carl Perillo playing right field raced over to get the ball, but of course couldn't. Got Louis Almo in left, Duke Snider in center, Perillo in right. Jackie Robinson is about four strides to the right of second base in a step. Hodges in halfway at first, 5 feet off the line. Ralph Branca, the right-hander, throws. Rizzuto swings and sends a ground ball to third. Up with his mix is going to his left. The throw to Hodges in time, and there's one away. Bill Rizzuto grounds out, mixes to Hodges. A ground ball hit into the hole between third and short, but not too hard, giving Mixes a chance to flash to his left, come up with it, with Reese backing him up. And now here's Tommy Henrick, getting a hand as he is announced. Left-hand batter stands deep in the batter's box. Fairly close to the plate, not too close to it, however. Branca's first pitch to Tommy's right over for a call strike. Fastball, got plenty of the inside part of the plate. And just above the knees, Frank Crosetti coaching there at third base. Bill Dickey at first for New York. Mixes about 12 feet off the third baseline. Reese over towards second. In comes the pitch, inside and low for a ball. And the count is evened up at 1-1. Jackie Robinson at a point almost halfway between first and second. Back on the edge of the outfield grass. The outfield around toward right and deep. In center and right with Almo looking for Henrick perhaps to slice toward left. Though he's over toward left center a bit. The pitch, it's strike call over the outside corner. And it's a 1-2 count now on Henrick. Tommy started to cut at that ball. It was taking off, and he thought it might go wide of the plate, but it didn't. Roy Campanella picks up a clod of dirt off to the left of the plate, tosses it away in the direction of Yogi Berra, who's in the batter's circle. One out, nobody on, top of the first inning. Branca pitches. Henrick swings and grounds one down to first. Hodges up with it. Runs to the bag. Outruns Henrick, and they're two away. It's a hard ground ball, but right at Gil Hodges. And now with two down, up comes Yogi Berra. Larry Berra from St. Louis, Missouri, who had the distinction in this ballpark 2 years ago of hitting a pinch-hit home run over the right center field screen. Yogi playing with that swollen left hand. Outfield, infield set up the same for Berra as for Henrick. Big Ralph Branca, the right-hander, is into the windup. Around comes the arm. The pitch, curve, swung on. A ground ball foul down the first baseline. Gloved by Hodges, 3 feet foul. He whips it around to Robinson as the ball goes around the infield. Two men down, top of the first inning. And the thousands here wondering, of course, whether we will have a reproduction today of the first two games of the series played at the stadium, both pitchers' battles. 2-1-0 ball games, the teams dividing them. One strike to count on Berra. Branca pitches, change up, and it's high and outside. Ball one. He took a little bit off of a fastball. One ball, one strike. When Red told you about Casey Stengel in this ballpark years ago taking off his cap, letting a sparrow fly out, it reminded me of another story I'll tell you about in a moment. Berra swings and fouls it off to the left of the screen. There were reports after Henrick's homer to win the first game in the ninth inning, 1-0, that was the first time that it had ever happened. It was the first time it had happened to make a 1-0 victory in a World Series in a ninth inning. But Stengel, where the Giants had beaten the Yankees with an inside-the-park homer, 1-0, but that occurred in the seventh inning. The 1-2 pitch swung on a drive foul down the right field line going out of play. And when Casey hit that ball at Yankee Stadium, an inside-the-park homer, he lost his shoe rounding second base and continued to circle the bases with one shoe on and one off. One ball, two strikes, two outs. Top of the first inning. No score, nobody on base. Branca studies Campanella's sign. Roy in a crouch behind that plate, giving the pitcher a good target. The Dodger right-hander delivers, and Berra swings and drives another one foul down the right field line. This one into the upper deck. Swung on a curveball. Throughout the year, Yogi hits more foul home runs than any other member of the Yankee ball club, and perhaps more than a lot of ball players in a lot of clubs. In other words, he pulls very sharply, and he'll hit a million of them just foul into the right field stands. Branca all set. The 1-2 pitch, and Berra swings and misses. Strike three. Struck him out on a high fastball that took off outside. No runs, no hits, no errors, and nobody left on. And the score at the end of the first half of the first inning is New York 0, Brooklyn 0. You know, for 11 years, Gillette has broadcast the series and other sports classics for you fans. We know you enjoy these events. Yes, and thanks to your record-breaking purchases of Gillette products, we're able right now to offer you the greatest bargain in shaving history. Men, it's the improved Gillette Super Speed Razor Set and a stylish styrene travel case. This one-piece Gillette razor changes blades instantly and gives you the sweetest shaves ever. With it, you get a handy Gillette dispenser holding 10 Gillette Blue Blades. Every one factory sharp. And as I said, the combination comes in a serviceable styrene case that's really something. Now, Bandoneer, this outstanding $1.75 value is priced at only $1. Yes, only $1. So for the shaving buy of the year, get Gillette's World Series razor set. It's a beauty and a bargain. Last half of the first inning. The Dodgers sending up Pee Wee Reese, Eddie Mixis, and Carl Farrillo against the left-handed slants of Tommy Byrne. Born in Baltimore, Maryland, currently resides in Wake Forest, North Carolina. He went to Wake Forest, as did Ray Scarborough, Washington Senator pitcher. They were teammates down there. Tommy Byrne represents, in a manner of speaking, an enigma to Casey Stengel and to baseball observers. He has some of the best stuff any pitcher has in baseball. But his problem always has been controlling it. He frequently will pitch a game in which he'll walk anywhere from 6 to 10 men or more and yet keep the opposition from scoring. On the other hand, there have been times his wireless has cost him ball games. And so we're all set to go. And you never know just how Tommy Byrne will go. Generally, he has most of his wildest problems in the first inning, which has caused managers to wonder whether or not Tommy should warm up a little longer than the usual 15 minutes allotted for it. They've tried that, but that hasn't worked. Here's P.B. Reese leading off, right-hand hitter. Left-hander Tommy Byrne into the windup. In comes the pitch, and it is in there for a call strike. You've got Bobby Brown playing third base today, and he's in close in the event of a bunt by Reese. You've got Gene Woodling in left and Cliff Mapes in right. Yankee changes from the first two games. In comes the delivery, and it's outside and low for a ball. One and one. Byrne has a fastball that's alive. He's got a sweeping curve, and he's got a fast-breaking curve. The outfield playing Reese toward left and center and left with Mapes pulled over into right center a bit. In comes your delivery. Swung on and missed. Strike two. Reese gave it a good cut. One ball, two strikes to count on Pee-wee. Tommy Byrne, despite his wildness, has through the course of this year in winning 15 games and losing 7, won several key games for the Yankees in their battle for the pennant. Just when they had appeared to be in the throes of a losing slump, he would come along and win a key game for them, such as against Cleveland or one of the top teams that the Yankees had to beat. Now the delivery is inside. Reese hit him. I believe it hit him on the leg. Is that ball broke way on him? It did. He gets up and he trots on down to first. With a 1-2 count on Reese, Byrne whipped a terrifically breaking curveball inside, but it broke so far in that Reese couldn't even get out of the way of it. It hit him on the right ankle, or just above the right ankle, and time has been called while he trots up and down the line beyond first base toward right to take the sting out of it, and also the possibility of getting that blood circulating around in there so he can run. Jake Fittler, coaching that first base, is talking to him. Pee-wee says he's going to be all right. Meantime, Tommy is throwing a couple into Larry Berra. And time is back in, and into the plate now steps Eddie Mixis. Bats him right-handed, replacing Spider Jorgensen at third today with a left-hander going for New York. And so Tommy Byrne's wireless immediately comes into the spotlight ahead of the first hitter. He hit him. So Reese moves off first. The stretch by Tommy Byrne, a check of the runner. In comes the pitch, and it is a bunt foul off to the left of the plate, out of play, into the stands, to the left of our Mutual and Gillette broadcasting booth, which is located directly back of home plate. One strike to count on Eddie Mixis. Carl Perillo is on deck. Mixis is almost a local boy. He's from Burlington, New Jersey. Stands deep in the batter's box. Slightly open stance in close to the plate. Holds the bat just short of the end of the handle. Brown in close at third. Here's your pitch. Mixis takes outside for a ball. He did not indicate that he was going to bunt that time. Evidently, Bert shot and took the bunt sign off. Now he can just as quickly put it back on. Bobby Brown's still in close at third. Rizzuto's in halfway at short, three strides to the left of second. Coleman, same distance to the right of the bag and in halfway. Henry Coley against Reese, who takes a good lead. The stretch by Byrne, a look. And the pitch into the plate. Outside. Ball two, 2-1. Two balls, one strike. Tommy Byrne now forcing himself a little bit after having hit Reese. He has a problem of his own mentally, and that he's thinking about his wildness. Two balls, one strike. Byrne all set. A look at Reese leading off first. And the pitch to Mixes. Outside for ball three. 3-1. Now Jerry Coleman trots in from second base to talk to Byrne. No activity in the Yankee bullpen as yet. Coleman talking to Tommy. You've got Carl Perillo on deck and Jackie Robinson to follow. Top half, the last half of the first inning, no score. Top of the order for Brooklyn. Reese on first, hit by a pitched ball. The count 3-1 on Eddie Mixes. Byrne takes his stretch. Reese with the lead. The delivery right in there for call strike two. Pumped a fastball through there. Mixes steps out of the batter's box just for a moment. Now he's back in. Mix's hind foot is half out of the back restraining line of the batter's box. It's a violation that's often, most of the time, overlooked. We're ready for the payoff pitch. There goes Reese. The pitch is swung on. It's a high pop-up off to the left of the plate. Barra stumbles as he starts back for the ball, getting toward the dugout for the Yankees and makes the catch. And Reese goes to second base. There's a throw to Coleman, and Reese is double up at second base. And Art Passarella just ran over to the Yankee dugout and warned Casey Stengel. Stengel had come out of the Yankee dugout onto the playing area proper to coach Barra on the ball, and Passarella warned him. But it was a daring gamble by Pee-wee and an alert play and a good play by Yogi to double up Reese at second. And they're two down, and here's Carl Perillo, right-hand hitter, and the pitch. Swung on a drive to deep right center field. DiMaggio racing back toward the wall and leaps, and DiMaggio's there under it, and he makes the catch. No runs for Brooklyn. No hits, no Yankee errors, nobody left on base, and so we've had a lot of excitement already in the opening inning, and it may be a harbinger of things to come in this third game of the World Series. So in the last half of the first inning, after Reese was hit by the pitched ball, Mixes, with a 3-1 count on him, took the next pitch for 3-2, and then hit a high foul pop-up off to the left of the plate that Yogi Berra caught after stumbling, starting back, caught it near the Yankee dugout, and Pee-wee tagged up at first and broke for second, with Berra having his back to the plate, thinking he might get the jump, thinking perhaps that Berra wouldn't figure him to be going. But Yogi whirled, and of course the boys on the bench hollered to Yogi to tell him, and threw. His throw was not too true. It was on the shortstop side of second. But Jerry Coleman was there to take it and had plenty of time to reach for it and then come back and tag Reese out sliding in for the double play. So as we go to the top of the second inning of the scoreless game, up steps Joe DiMaggio. Joe DiMaggio leads off with Bobby Brown and Gene Woodling to follow. Ralph Branca on the hill. Outfield around toward left, infield around toward third to the pitch. Right over for a call strike. Fastball, overhand fastball. Mixes deep at third near the line, about 2 feet off of it. Pee-wee Reese back on the edge of the left field grass and over toward the third base hole with Robinson three strides to the right of second. Branca throws low outside for a ball. 1-1. One ball, one strike. The Dodgers have certainly got a good book on the Yankees. That is to say, they have scouted them well. Scouting is permitted in baseball just as it is in football. One ball, one strike. Ralph Branca works. And the pitch. Curve swung on and missed. Strike two. A good swing, a good hook. 1-2 the count. The Mad Joes had only one hit in the series, and that was what the boys in the trade term a bleeder, as he beat out a slow roller in the ninth inning yesterday. Frank ahead of the hitter, and the 1-2 pitch on its way. DeMadge swings and misses. Strike three. Joe DiMaggio went down swinging on an inside fastball. And now coming up is Bobby Brown. Bobby bats him left-handed. He had a 1,000 batting average for World Series play until he pinch hit yesterday and struck out. In 1947, he hit every time that he was charged with a time at bat. Branca's first pitch is swung on. It's a looping fly ball out in the short center. Going out is Robinson. In comes Snyder's Jackie out there. Makes the catch in short center for out number two. With two down, the batter is Gene Woodling.
Number 14, Gene Woodling, left fielder.
Woodling came up from San Francisco to the Yankees this year after having had brief trials with Cleveland and Pittsburgh. He led the Pacific Coast League in hitting last year with a .385 average. A boy from Akron, Ohio. Stands in close to the plate, deep in the batter's box. Feet together. Chokes the bat just about an inch. In comes the pitch, and it's a little inside. Ball one. They play Woodling toward right in center and right. Straight away in left. The big gap in left center. Woodling slices. He can pull. Third baseman Eddie Mixes in halfway on the skin part of the infield. A dozen feet off the line. Branca throws. The pitch is right over for a call strike, a fastball, and the count is evened up at 1-1. Reese is about three strides to the left of second, in two steps. Jackie Robinson halfway between first and second, back on the edge of the right field grass with Gil Hodges deep and 3 feet off the first baseline. 1-1 the count. Two men out, top of the second inning, no score. Branca's pitch. Strike. It's called a fastball over that inside corner. Back Woodling away, but the pitch stayed right in there. A 1-2 count on Gene. Cliff Mapes on deck. Frank Rossetti coaching there at third, hollering something up to Woodling. Branca gets his sign from Campanella. Starts the windup. Around comes the right arm. The pitch. Curve, and it's outside. Ball two. It was a beauty. Just missed. Art Passarella calling balls and strikes. Of the American League, Lou Jordan of the National League umpiring at first, Cal Hubbard of the American League at second, Beans Reardon of the National League at third, George Barr of the National League down the left field line, and Ed Hurley of the American League down the right field line. And now Branca's 2-2 pitch to Woodling. Swung on, it's a high pop-up, foul off back of third, mixes, waves Campanella off, and he's under it and makes the catch. Woodling fouls out. Two mixes. No runs, no hits, no errors, nobody left on. And we move right along. You know, watching today's game with us here in the broadcasting booth is a ball player you all know, Bertie Tebbets, aggressive receiver for the Boston Red Sox. Bertie, tell the folks why you prefer Gillette Blue Blades.
Well, that's a cinch, Mel. They're the only kind that give me a decent shave.
Well, how do you account for that?
Well, they're sharper than a hound's tooth, and they don't break down like other blades do.
You buy them in the Gillette dispenser, of course.
Naturally. It costs nothing extra and is mighty handy.
Yes, fans, it pays to ask for Gillette Blue Blades. 10 or 20 at a time in the modern Gillette dispenser that zips them out unwrapped. You save time, save fuss, and change blades presto. Look sharp, feel sharp, be sharp. Use Gillette Blue Blades with the sharpest edges ever honed. Ready now for the last half of the second inning. Nothing and nothing. And so far, this has been primarily a goose-egg series, hasn't it, Red?
Well, Mel, you've had only two runs and two ball games and 1.5 innings.
I don't believe they run out of goose eggs for the scoreboard, do you?
I believe they got enough out there if the pitchers can continue to deal them out.
Jackie Robinson leads off for the Dodgers in the last half of the second. Gil Hodges and Louie Olmo to follow. Phil Rizzuto hollers something over there to Tommy Byrne as Tommy went to the rosin bag. The left-hander sets to work on Big Jackie, right-hand hitter. Brown in close at third. in the event of the bunt. Tommy Burns pitched to Robinson. Swung on. It's a high fly ball out into short right. As a matter of fact, the wind is holding it up, and Coleman, back of Henrick, makes the catch. A step on the skin part of the infield. As the ball started out, it looked as if it was going to go out into short right. Mape started in, but the wind, which is blowing in from right field and out toward left, held it up. And Coleman took it right in behind Henrick. So with one down, up comes Gil Hodges. Bats him right-handed. Outfield is around toward left. Hodges drove in the winning run for the Dodgers yesterday. Drove in Jackie Robinson, who had doubled in that inning. Now the pitch. Strike call over the outside corner. Burn southpaw to fastball. That nicked the outside part of the plate just above the knees to Big Gill. Brown deep at third, or halfway back near the line. In comes the pitch, and it's way outside for a ball. One and one. Phil Rizzuto is not too far over into the third base hole, but pretty close to it. Jerry Coleman only about two strides to the right of second. Henrick, 10 feet off first base, in halfway on the skin part of the infield. In comes the pitch. Hodges takes strike called as Tommy Byrne whipped a curve over the outside corner. It's a 1-2 count now on Hodges. One out. Last half of the second inning, no score. Milton Stock, coaching at third for the Dodgers, cups his hands over his mouth, hollers words of encouragement up to Big Gill, who has come along fast in his development as a first baseman. In comes the pitch. Curve swung on, popped up into the air, off to the left of the plate. Yogi Berra goes over and makes the catch.